It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
It's just match reaction for Brighton 0, Everton 0 in a football match where very, very little happened. I'm joined by Mark Mosey again, watching the game together, socially distanced, all that sort of thing. Pubs are open today, but unfortunately, that was probably the highlight of the day today, Mark, from our point of view, because Everton turned up at the Amex Stadium with a whole new raft of injuries we didn't know about, and then put in a performance you'd sort of expect, really, with those injuries in mind. And so I suppose the best way to probably sum it up is that at full time, we both sort of sat there and looked at each other and went, is that all right? Is that okay given the circumstances? And I think we both probably erred on the fact that probably not, but maybe.
Probably not all right at the start of the weekend, but as you say, going into the lineups, getting announced and the warm up, and I mean, gone are the days where the travelling Everton squad is in any way an indication of who's going to be playing, because we obviously hope to have Alan back for this game. Before they got on the train or however they got down there, Dominic Calvert-Lewin looked like he was going to play as well. But I think we were chatting sort of midway through this game about, is this, I hesitate to use the word crisis, but is this the most injury concerns, certainly in terms of a starting 11 that Everton have had in probably the last couple of decades? And you are really pushing it now to think of a time where we've been this short. And I know that the starting 11 is pretty familiar tonight, but I think the context of the result can probably be very closely linked to the bench that we've got tonight. And I think other than Alex Iwobi, and obviously we've seen glimmers of people like Nkunku, but you are looking at that 11 and thinking, well, on the horizon in 4 days' time is yet another Premier League game, which is a travesty in itself. And we don't look, I know that our away form has been relatively good this so far this season, but we just don't look like a team at the moment who is capable of going out and having faith in the way that they're playing. We're not in good form. You have to take Premier League results, be at home or away, against relatively okay sides like Brighton. I know that in an ideal world, you probably look at that at the start of the weekend and say, well, this is a massive opportunity for us to stay in the race. But it became very clear to me, certainly at the start of the second half, that tonight was all about getting out there without getting beat. Yeah. And I know that sounds incredibly negative against a team who, on paper, we all think that we should be beaten. And in an ideal world, that is absolutely the case. But I just don't think that... I think halfway through that first half, you thought, if Everton hit top gear for 10 minutes, we'll win this game. But at no point, other than brief glimmers of seeing James Rodriguez on the ball, did you think that we had enough quality to be the difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a summary of why we've just watched a 0-0.
And I think, you know, it's a totally different game to Monday. But I think in some respects, you can. It reminds me a bit to Monday, obviously against Palace in some respects as well, because I think in the grand scheme of a season, if you're having a good season, you have a game like you did against Palace where you miss chances and you draw 1-0, you go, that's fine.
Yeah.
If you have a game like tonight where you've got, you know, was it 11 first team players out injured by the end of it? You know, not first 11 players, but players who'd make up the first team squad. You'd have those and you go, do you know what? That's fine. But I think it's the wider context, isn't it, of having been in the race for top four, but in the race for European football, having seen West Ham, Arsenal, and plenty of other sides over the weekend who were sort of vying with get victories, you know, take that step on. It sort of goes in that frustration, and the wider context makes it even more annoying.
Yeah, I think the concern that we had a few weeks ago when we were kind of level on points with people like Chelsea and Tottenham was that we were very much sure in the fact that those sorts of teams were going to finish the season a lot stronger than we do, because pushing on after 29 or 30 games is just not what Everton are in any way adept at. And we always knew that, you know, Tottenham hasn't necessarily got the result that they wanted this weekend, but teams like that and Chelsea and Liverpool getting that late win at Aston Villa, West Ham just seem utterly relentless at the moment. And unfortunately, Everton look like the team that, you know, going back a few months, were the pretenders of this bizarre Premier League season that we all knew that we were on the horizon of. And I said to you during the game, Matt, in that so much of my Everton-related frustration comes from the fact that we are seeing a David Moyes team take advantage of a very unique Premier League year that we knew was there for the taking. And I think that it's half frustration at Everton not taking that opportunity. And yes, we're saying this with 8 games of the Premier League season left. And even at this stage, anything could happen. And we've said so often that 2 or 3 consecutive results in this league will do wonders for you. And I know that's a very obvious statement to make, but 6 or 9 points has never seemed more massive in any season than it inevitably will be in this one. But to see a team like West Ham kind of take that initiative and take that opportunity is quite disappointing. But I think any form of disappointment that you can have in Everton not kicking on in the last couple of games or in particular in tonight is the caveat massively there is the fact that we are going into this with children on the bench. You can't do anything. I know that we've put so much financially into building a squad that is capable of withstanding the turmoils of what a Premier League season has to offer, but I think the situation that we're in now is particularly unique and particularly damaging.
You can't legislate for that,
can you? No, absolutely not.
You know, to have your starting goalkeeper,
yeah,
5, I think we sort of did the summer show on the game, 5 of our 6 starting central midfielders,
yeah,
our top goal scorer, all unavailable. You know, that's not something that you the manager and his coaching staff sit around at the start of the campaign and go, right, yeah, what happened? What do we do in this situation when all of these lads are injured?
It's probably the nature of the player that we're missing as well. I think you probably look at people like Sigurdsson, James, Richarlison, all very technically gifted. If you put a chance on the plate for them, they will absolutely take it. And they are all, to a man, capable of being difference makers. But the types of footballers that win you games are Alan, Decore, Calvert-Lewin. And that's not to take anything away from their technical ability, but they're the types of players that turn results like tonight into a 1, or, you know, get another 1 later on, a 2-0 victory. You don't really think much of it because people like Decore just do what they do. 90 minutes of energy. They're capable, yes, of picking out, you know, nice through balls or certain individual technical good aspects at certain points, but they're essentially there just to be winners. And I don't necessarily think we had anyone in the team tonight who was capable of just being that linchpin in the middle, allowing people like James and Richarlison to go and do the intricate bits up top. But it all felt very disjointed. I think so many times during the game tonight we said an Everton goal is not going to stem from an attack that was formed at centre half, and we play a nice, you know, transition through the middle of the park, and then it was never going to be a 10 to 15 pass move that resulted in the goal. It was going to be picking up second balls 40 yards out. Can we get it right to Dean or Coleman, pull one back, and someone like Sigurdsson or James to come onto the ball late? And it all felt a little bit laborious in terms of getting up the pitch. But as you say, if you pick away so many of your key players from that 11, then that's always going to be the pattern of the game.
Yeah, and I think when you have results like that, you do, you know, it can be quite cathartic to do these and go, you know, you were shite and all this. And I think that there were sort of some players on the pitch tonight who didn't perform to the best, you know, particularly in an attacking point of view. But just I think one moment in the first half in particular summed it up for me. I'm just watching the man I'm going to talk about now on the screen here, Seamus Coleman, doing his interview on Sky. And it was where Richarlison got the ball and played the ball, played a really good pass down the line to Coleman. He was bursting through and you're thinking, right, he's down the line, get a good ball into the box.
Yeah.
And the two players in the box were Tom Davis just about getting into the box on the edge and Luka Dean. And you think, well, that's where we are. You know, if you have Dominic Calvert-Lewin there, he's obviously in there. People like Decore can break forward as well and get into that position. And obviously because we had one senior central midfielder fit in Tom Davis, James and Gylfi Sigurdsson have got to be a little bit more disciplined. And I just felt a thought that moment was like, there were a lot of little instances like that tonight where you sort of, it was the pass, three or four passes before we were going to score. Mm-hmm. You thought, right, we're in here. And then because Richarlison had to drop deep to play it, there's nobody in the middle. Or because Hammett had to drop deep to play it, he was out the move for the rest of it then. It was almost like we were always like that, like a couple of players short in the final third to be able to take those next steps and those moves.
Yeah, I think you've got a couple of things there. And the two most prominent attacking players tonight in Richarlison and James, they are so much more comfortable, or certainly in Richarlison's case, he thinks he's more comfortable at coming short for the ball, as you say, into Lincoln with someone like Coleman or Dean out wide, and not necessarily being uninvolved in play. And how often we say that about Richarlison, and that the best of him individually and the best of Everton collectively is when he is not involved in the build-up play. And that's not to take anything away from the footballer he is, but we all know that he operates so well inside the lines of the 18-yard box. And the more that he does have this temptation to drop deep, then the more damaging it is for us collectively in terms of our play. But I think the other thing that we fell victim of tonight is that the midfield three is almost too fluid at times. I know you mentioned about Tom Davis breaking forward in that particular move. We saw it in the second half where he had an opportunity
to shoot. When he was like the target man, wasn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Was knocking the ball over the top to him.
Yeah, running down the right-hand side. We were clipping balls through for him. He had a good opportunity from the edge of the box with 25 yards out in the last 20 minutes. But in the same breath, 10 minutes later, you'll see him picking the ball up off Michael Keane. And James, in particular, is one who's guilty of this as well, in that he starts the game right up top of Richarlison, and you can almost see the impatience developing with time, because you can see him going looking for the ball. It's all a little bit Wayne Rooney-esque in that sense, in that you see him at left back and you think, well, the angst for him to get involved in the game is so great that the discipline kind of goes a
little
bit. That's
when you know it's not working.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think Ancelotti kind of afforded him that freedom in the end. When we talk about people like James Rodriguez having freedom, then you often think about him being in that sort of free 10 role behind the striker. But in his mind, it's going and picking the ball up off the centre halves and trying to make something happen. And as much as you applaud him for his endeavour, both on the ball and off the ball tonight, I think that must
be the most he's run in an Everton game tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really
put
himself about, yeah.
And I think in terms of how fans feel about that result, you probably personify that in James Rodriguez in terms of how he carried himself on the pitch. That's possibly one of the greatest technically gifted players ever to play for Everton, realising that tonight's just not one of those nights. It's not one of those pick the ball up 30 yards out, spray it out to Luka Dean and score a nice pretty goal. And as much as we'd have all loved to have seen that, there are times where senior players like that realise that it's just not one of those football matches. He definitely did that tonight, and arguably if he doesn't recognise this kind of dangers that Everton were susceptible to on the break, then it could be an altogether more different and definitely more disappointing result. But I think just to touch on that, and the fact that we have, I hesitate to use the phrase come out of it with a point, because we don't want to be that sort of negative about what an Everton side going to Brighton should represent. But I think defensively, we all expected us to be relatively solid at the back tonight, given that two-thirds of our team were defenders. But that is probably the positive that you do look at, in that so many of those back four that we want to see. And we've been considering how we shoehorn people like Ben Godfrey and Mason Holgate into that starting 11 consistently. I think massive credit has to go to Mason Holgate.
He's definitely what I was going to talk about. Yeah.
It's probably not the greatest game of football he's ever played, is it? But I think in terms of asking a young footballer to do something like he's done tonight, I think he deserves massive credit.
Yeah, and I think obviously there's been a lot of talk about the centre-backs, hasn't there? And, we've all got a habit of looking ahead and going, right, who's going to be our centre-back partnership next year? And I imagine Holgate probably would have been fourth in the pecking order on the list of a lot of people. But I think what he's shown in the last few weeks in regards to playing, you know, back three, playing in midfield tonight, and then going back into the back three, and then maybe it was a back four again, at the end. And he went back into midfield for a little bit when Tom came off as well. And it was a bit strange. But I think probably what he's done in the last couple of games is just showing the manager that he can be really useful in different situations. And I think, you know, while if he plays at right back, he's not going to be able to get forward and put crosses into the box. He can do a job there. Can do a job in a back three. He can play in midfield if needed as well. And some of his passing was great tonight as well. You know, stepping out from that deep midfield position, pinging balls around. I think if we're going to stick with this back three, I think for me it sort of feels like it's got to be Godfrey and Holgate in the wider centre-back positions, and then one of Mina and Michael Keane in the centre, because Michael Keane played on the left of that back three tonight, palpitations all over the place whenever he gets dragged out to that shape. He's just not comfortable in that position at all. So, but yeah, Holgate, I think he's definitely probably showing the manager that he's worth keeping around for a while beyond this season.
Yeah, I think the irony around Holgate and what you've just said in terms of trying to rank these in some form of defensive hierarchy is that he potentially is third or fourth in terms of, if you go and play a flat back four, who plays in that two. He, in my mind, is first or second in terms of if clubs came sniffing in the summer, who do you not want to lose?
Yeah.
As much as you probably do look at people like Yerry Mina and Michael Keane as being higher up in terms of being names on the team sheet, if you were to put your best 11 out, I think the versatility and the footballing intelligence that lad has to go and do something like he's done tonight, we've seen it in previous seasons as well. I think myself and you, Matt, referenced the Man United game away at Old Trafford when he put such a great shift in, again, alongside Tom Davis. I think that personal relationship definitely allows for Mason Holgate to be a lot more settled in that midfield. I think the difference with... People have spoken about Ben Godfrey and seeing him in the centre of midfield. I personally have never seen that. I personally can never imagine that, because I think he's just so good in terms of one-on-one defending. That
block from Welbeck.
Absolutely, tonight, yeah. I mean, that's exactly the same scenario that Batshuayi scores against last Monday. And I think what you possibly afford from having the physical presence of a Godfrey in the midfield, you undoubtedly lose double that in your back line. So I would much rather see Mason Holgate in there for that reason, for Godfrey's defensive ability, but also for Holgate's just general composure on the ball. I think so many times the ball is kind of bobbing around in that midfield, and it kind of passes you by in terms of how calm and focused you have to be just to play simple 5 or 10 yard passes out to your fullback. And I think so often, I mean, God forbid if we saw someone like a Michael Keane or you know, a more sort of traditional centre-half thrown into that position, they would absolutely not have the composure to play any form of pass in there, never mind one where you've got Mason Holgate, as you say, spraying balls out to Seamus Coleman. He is just generally a footballer.
And I think he probably reads the game better than any of the centre-backs we've got, in terms of, well, I suppose he's got to, hasn't he, because of his, you know, he's not as physical as the others. Yeah. He's got to be able to be in the right place at the right time and position himself better. And I suppose that sort of thing transitions better into central midfield, and when you've got to play out of position than maybe other players.
It's arguably, I know we referenced that Man United game, it's arguably a more difficult task tonight, because you are asking your midfielders at times to go and pick the ball up and go and be progressive, go and find your Seamus Coleman or Luca Dean out wide. And I think in the past when we've asked players to do it, when we've asked young people to come into that central midfield, we've asked them to be relatively destructive, break up the play. I'm thinking Holgate against United, Beningame away at Stamford Bridge. Yeah, they're the types of performances that it's almost quite restrictive in terms of the game. You don't allow them to kind of take the shackles off. And to an extent, we were expecting Mason Holgate to do that tonight. We've got no real right to expect Mason Holgate to be able to do that. But I think you equally see him drop back into that defensive three and have incredibly important touches, like the header he managed to flick away from the corner. I think it should not be understated how difficult it is for an Everton player in particular to go as a centre-half into the central midfield and then drop back into a five at the back, which we've never really looked totally natural at. I think generally the football intelligence that he showed tonight was definitely not to be underrated.
Anyone else stand out for you tonight, really? You know, I'm just sort of thinking through there. I think Holgate was probably comfortably our best player. Really. Mm-hmm. I think Seamus Coleman's playing pretty well at the moment, isn't he? He had a good game against Crystal Palace. Probably our best attacking outlet tonight at times, really. Mm-hmm. Seems to have found a little bit of form late in the season. And listen, I don't think anyone's expecting him to be our starting right back next year, but probably showing enough in glimpses that if you need him for 10 games here and there next season, then he could probably still do a job.
I think I'd have felt uncomfortable with Everton performing in that game or possibly getting anything out of it if he wasn't there. And you know, he's had loads of critics over the years, and I've definitely been one of them on occasions, but there's certain games where you just feel like when that, everything we said about James earlier in terms of just having that finger on the pulse of the fact that the match is not going to be one of those where technical ability necessarily pulls you over the line. I think he's got that workmanlike ability, and I know that we're stripping everything away from the technical aspects of his game, but there were certain moments in the second half whereby
down the right hand side,
for all of your money, it looks as though he's about to lose that ball, but somehow manages to shrug a couple of players off, plays a really intelligent ball inside to James Rodriguez, and on another day, they're the difference makers in terms of moments in the game. But yeah, I think he played well. It always comes back to James for one reason or another, but I think tonight we all got the sense that if anything was to happen, it was probably going to come from him.
Probably the first time in his Everton career you looked at him and gone, the things he did tonight, the best things he did tonight were more about off the ball and tracking back as opposed to what he does on the ball.
But it is nice to see that on occasion, as much as I think so much of the narrative from Ancelotti this year, when he's been asked about defensive contributions in press conferences and by the media, it's always been an afterthought with James, and we totally get that, because in an ideal world, that is absolutely what it should be. We want to see his best work done in the last 30 yards. But I think in terms of players who are disappointed, it's hard to get a read of how someone like Richarlison played tonight, because he was so isolated.
Good free centre-backs as well.
Absolutely, yeah. You need that physical presence alongside him. And with Calvert-Lewin playing, it was never going to happen. You probably look at Gylfi Sigurdsson and say, I expect more from you in that game. I think it became very clear early on in the first half that physically James Rodriguez was being targeted. We all know that physically James Rodriguez is not going to give you a consistent 90 minutes anyway, but I think what you're expecting in those situations where you have got someone like him under pressure is that Gylfi Sigurdsson's going to cotton on to the fact that if they're doubling up on James, then I've got time and space to operate.
Yeah, he didn't really do that at all, did he?
No. And we're not going to go down in the rabbit hole of how much he hides from play, which is absolutely an issue. But I think we might as well buy into the fact that he's going to be around for at least another season. And if he is going to be, well, the defence that we've often afforded to Sigurdsson in the past is that when games like Brighton away or Crystal Palace at home are stuck in a rut on 60 or 70 minutes, then you need a difference maker. I didn't necessarily feel like that moment was ever really going to come tonight, and I think that they are the situations where you need your more technically gifted players to step up. But But no, you ask about individual performances. Honestly, it was not that type of game, was it? There was no one who really stepped forward. We joked during the game about if you could have one player in this situation to have on that pitch now, who would it be? And we just needed that clinical edge that someone like a Calvert-Lewin would have given us.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But finally then, obviously disappointed that we didn't win tonight, got the draw. The season feels like it's unravelling. Maybe you would have said it's unravelled if we'd lost tonight, but it does feel like it hinges on Friday, doesn't it? You know, we've got, I think we're 1 point behind Spurs now, or 2 points behind them.
One behind Spurs
with a game in hand on them. Obviously, we play them on Friday night as well. Who knows what kind of 11 we'll be able to cobble together for that game, depending on who's fit or not. But it all hinges on that now, doesn't it? You know, it's a team we've beaten twice already in the season, granted, but there's going to be a bit of a patch-up 11, and, you know, it's a Goodison Park where we've been absolutely dreadful recently.
Yeah, I think the concern is that, I mean, I'm not saying anything that Gary Neville hasn't in recent times, but if you offer Everton that carrot of being able to progress up the league or catch up on teams like Tottenham, then they are ultimately opportunities that we don't take. Something about Tottenham at home at Goodison Park just fills me with dread on an annual basis. It never strikes me as a game that we're capable of getting anything out of. And I know that we say that coming off the back of an absolutely bonkers last outing against Tottenham. There is something about that game where I just think, given a higher level of quality going forward, which obviously they will offer, games like tonight probably stride away from us a little bit. People like Gareth Bale and Harry Kane and not that type of player, Heung-Min Son, they're definitely the players who are going to cause us problems. Defensively, you again look at the fact that we've got the personnel there to deal with those sorts of issues, but I think that when the impetus is on, not that it matters so much this season, but when the impetus is on the home team to go and do something and break the lines and possibly try and snatch a result, I think it's getting very close to that stage of the season now where Everton are kind of pulling away very slowly from sort of the standard 11th or 12th
it
position.
It feels like they're dropping back somehow. Because it doesn't really feel like we're going anywhere.
I think there has to become a point, doesn't there, where Everton roll the dice. And we either decide whether we're going to finish 7th or 8th and hope that Man City win the lot and we finish in the 7th European place or whatever it is. Or do we really go for it? And do we, on the hour mark against Spurs, do we really, you know, bring one of our under 12 strikers on and say,
Harry Tower on up front.
Yeah. Recall Ellis Sims and say, well, let's make a go of it. But I appreciate that they're very difficult calls to make because we're playing against high level opposition and we quite simply haven't got the depth to do that at the moment. But do you know what? This season was always about taking risks. And I know we reference teams like West Ham in terms of just sensing that opportunity and kind of running with it and gaining some momentum. But you are still looking at that league table thinking, well, anyone from 5th to 10th can interchange positions at the moment. And two or three results. And I know that we look at the fixture list and teams like Tottenham and Arsenal coming up, but
Villa.
How often has this Everton side faltered against weakened opposition and then gone and built a few results against good opposition like we did back in December? So it's still all to play for.
Trying to be positive after watching that. Did well there, mate, to get 27 minutes out of a game where nothing really happened whatsoever. but yeah, there we are. It's the benefits of getting together and having a bevy. You can just chat about 0-0 draws. But that's it from me and Mark. Make sure you do tune in to the Monday, obviously, and that'll be Tuesday show. Ben Crawford tomorrow on the Blue Room Extra. And all usual content this week, building up to that game on Friday against Tottenham Hotspur. There's a massive one that now, isn't it? But fingers crossed the Blues can finally put the home record right. Cheers to Mark. Thanks very much for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Something you probably do know. Progressive can not only offer you a great price when you bundle home and auto, they offer you round-the-clock protection, Something you probably don't know? A driveway basketball hoop, including the base, weighs around 400 pounds. Something you probably do know? There's a windstorm coming. Something you probably don't know? A basketball hoop tipping over can poke a hole in a car roof like a can opener. Bundle your home and auto with Progressive and get more than a great price. Get round-the-clock protection. Something you know for the things you don't know. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and third-party insurers and subject to policy terms. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.